Kia ora and welcome to the Amateur Austenite. I'm Frances Duncan, an author and the founder of the Jane Austen Society of Aotearoa New Zealand. My co-host is Amy.
Kia ora.
Today we're discussing Chapter 14 of Northanger Abbey. In Chapter 14, Catherine walks with the Tilneys, and although Mr. Tilney mocks quite a bit, it's all in good humour. We got Jane Austen's voice again saying, "My heroine."
Yes.
She was unnaturally able to fulfil her engagement, though it was made with the hero himself.
Indeed, indeed.
Is it sort of like distance makes the heart go through and you've got to fight to get to see each other?
Or maybe it's good to get to know the person that you're determined to, like, be married to at the end of the book. Who knows?
Though if you listen to Charlotte Lucas, apparently it's better to not know the person you're going to marry. You'll figure it out eventually. It's not going to be good. Austen puts potentially her words in Mr. Tilney's mouth. The person, be it gentleman or lady, who has not pleasure in a good novel must be intolerably stupid.
Which is, again, a reiteration of this ongoing thing of, like, hey, reading books is good, actually. And if you're a writer of books, you should be happy that people read books. It is important that people do that. You writer, you.
This is kind of a mirror of the conversation that she had with John Thorpe the first day that she met him. Because he's like, no, I don't read books. How many novels are you thinking? And then goes on to list some novels that he has read.
It's very much like constantly we have an interaction with either John or Mr. Tilney, and then we will have the next interaction with John or Mr. Tilney. They will mirror that one. You have reflection of previous interactions just kind of building on each other to continuously highlight how much John is just the worst.
John Thorpe sucks Mr. Tilney forever.
Yeah.
It's a good way to show who they are. Because if you just had Mr. Tilney mocking, you might think he's mean.
Mm-hmm.
But when you realise that he's making a joke out of it, and you can see John Thorpe, who literally doesn't listen to anything she says.
John Thorpe has basically defined what she expects of, like, a marriageable man, TM, to be acting like. She's come to Bath on this trip because there isn't really anyone back home that she could be around. Therefore, every person that she meets is kind of like, this is how this type of person is, should be, this is the way that the world works. And so you see that with Isabella. Oh, this is what a female friendship is like. Da, 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 da. And we see how this goes wrong. And we see that with John Thorpe. And, like, this is what a man who is interested in you is like. And this is what you should be expecting out of a man who is interested in you compared to Mr. Thorpe. And it's like, oh, no, wait, actually, someone can, like, respect my ideas and think that I am a person who's worth listening to as well as just worth looking at. Huh, interesting. And with Miss Tilney is someone who is just, like, genuinely interested in hanging out with me, as opposed to, and this from the previous chapter, doing weird manipulative BS to try and separate you from the people that you are. Oh, it's bad.
The three sets of siblings, the Morlands, the Thorpes, and the Tilneys, and they're all very different people.
Yeah.
But similarities between each of the siblings, which I'm not sure you'd really actually get in real life. I don't think I'm much like any of my siblings.
Oh, I don't know. I don't have any siblings to compare with, so.
So Mr. Tilney likes playing games with language.
Yeah, he is so annoying about that, actually. Listen, this descriptivism over prescriptivism. Language evolves, language changes. Don't be a jerk about it.
That's the thing, because language changes. Because nice, he's saying it used to mean neatness, refinement. People were nice in their dress, their sentiments. But now everything can be called nice. It's like cool was a word that used to mean not hot.
Mm-hmm.
And then it meant something that was popular or good. And that's going out of fashion and probably is out of fashion. And now slay is a fashion which used to mean killing somebody and then was very, what's the word, taken from the gay community?
So it actually originally comes from African-American vernacular English,
which
is then taken by particularly drag queens because there's a big interaction between, like, African-American ball culture and then drag ball culture and it all kind of soups together. And then from the drag queens, it hits the queer community and then broader communities as a whole.
Yes, that. Thank you. Although I find it a bit harder to use in conversation than cool, because is something slay that is so slay seems wrong?
There's a specific like verbiage and wording of it. It's like that's a slay rather than slayed. Or it depends. I'm
not hip and cool.
And I,
because no one uses those words anymore.
And I'm not up. I haven't got enough brain power today to do a full linguistics lecture. I'm real sorry.
Yes, I should also note that Emmy did linguistics.
Yeah.
Which is why she's so great with language. Also, she's very smart, obviously. And she's friends with me, so all stacks up. You find that thing again of Catherine wanting to be like the Tilneys. We like going for walks. I like going for walks. I can come for walks. And they're like, we like how she's like, I wish I did. But she goes on to complain that it's boring and there's hardly any women, which sounds totally like an Austen complaint, by the way, because I bought this to show you today. The History of England by a Partial, Prejudiced and Ignorant Historian. Jane Austen wrote A History of England when she was a teenager, and it is adorable. And the note says, there will be very few dates in this history. And she just writes the most hilarious things. And her sister Cassandra drew little caricatures of the kings and queens that they're talking about. She just kind of like slides over some of the things and is like, no, but this person's so great. She loves Mary Queen of Scots for some reason. Goes on about how Mary Queen of Scots is fantastic. So if you haven't read it, you should be able to find it anywhere online, as you can with most of Jane Austen's works. It's real cute. History should be interesting. It should have more women as a very Jane Austen thing. She believes that. And yeah, she's created a thing that has that. Why can't history be fun? There's wars. There's love affairs. It should be fun. Why is it so dry and boring? She refers to it as torment for little boys and girls, which reminded me of a scene from Blackadder where Blackadder beats up Shakespeare.
Yes, and then goes back into the future and is like using Shakespeare references and no one has any idea what's going on because he so thoroughly beat up Shakespeare that he stopped Shakespeare from writing anything.
And thus saved many little boys and girls from having to read it. And Enya's like, yeah, I'm using torment now to mean instruct. You've said their synonyms.
Catherine is adamantly like, yes, well, if you had watched my mother have to try and teach me and my siblings how to read and spell, you would also consider torment and instruct to be synonyms.
I mean, she talks about it in the first chapter that
yeah,
Catherine's not that smart. Took her a while to pick stuff up. Henry makes a really good point, though. It's worthwhile to be tormented for a couple of years for the sake of being able to read all the rest of it.
And I would love to see him explain that to a toddler, you know, or like a 5-year-old, 10-year-old, like literally anyone in the age range where you're learning to read. Just like, yeah, no, it sucks right now, but forever you'll be able to read. And they're like, I don't want to. That's the point of this discussion. Tough. You are a child. You don't get a say in the matter.
Aww. And then they talk about painting and art. There's this beautiful line, where people wish to attach, they should always be ignorant. Did you see the 2022 Persuasion on Netflix?
No. I need to stress this for our relationship going forward.
If I ask you've seen something, Jane Austen, you will say no?
Correct, yes.
So there's this great scene where one of the women in Persuasion tells the main character, sit next to a guy at dinner and pretend you do not know anything, and he will tell you about it, and then he'll be attracted to you. Like, pretend you don't know how to use your knife and fork. And then there's a scene of that character literally doing that. Very funny. A woman, especially if she have the misfortune of knowing anything, should conceal it as well as she can. Men don't like smart women, apparently.
I totally understand the point that Austen is making, but also, if you want to make connections with people, going into a situation where you're willing to ask a lot of questions about them and their interests is how you make those connections.
Mm.
Like, it isn't exclusively a weird sexism dynamic. It's not just women have to act dumb for men to explain things. It's also, if you see someone on the street and you want to be their friend, you should ask them about their interests and ask them follow-up questions about those interests, because that way they know that you're interested. You can think that's boring as hell, but so long as you're asking the questions, then you will be able to develop a relationship. It's good advice. It's buried in a lot of weird advice, but it is fundamentally good advice.
And Emma, Austen has Mr. Knightley say, men of sense, whatever you may choose to say, do not want silly wives. But here, Austin sees imbecility in females as a great enhancement of their personal charms. Again, we've got to assume that Jane Austen's making fun of this trope here.
Yeah, I think particularly with how this novel gets laid out, that is a safe assumption to make. You can provide advice and not agree with the advice. You can say this is what works. It sucks that it works, but this is what works.
I wonder if this is something Austen had to put up with because she's obviously whip smart and having to dull herself down so she doesn't freak out men around her. I mean, Mr. Tilney does get a little bit taken in. Because Catherine's attention is so earnest, he becomes perfectly satisfied that she has a great deal of natural taste.
And he's just so chuffed that he was able to fully educate her in the ways of the arts. That she goes from not having an artistic bone in her body to being able to decide that including bath in an environmental landscape would just be absolutely ridiculous. And he's like, oh, so proud.
Then he goes into this whole mocking thing because Catherine's talking about a book that's going to come out and Miss Tilney thinks she's talking about a riot that's going to happen in London.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, as any rational creature would know, she's talking about a circulating library.
Yes.
But you immediately pictured a mob of 3,000 men. The tower threatened, the streets of London flowing with blood. And to quell the insurgents, the gallant Captain Frederick Tilney at the head of his troop knocked off his horse by a brickbat from upper window. Like, very clear picture.
Yeah, immediately we get the full scene, and a reminder that all of these people read horror novels, you know?
She's like, okay, yes, that is very funny, but you can't say shit like that in front of Catherine. She's gonna think you don't like women. He's like, okay. I think very highly of the understanding of all women, especially those I happen to be in company with. She's like, no! Okay, let me try again. No one can think more highly of the understanding of women than I do. In my opinion, nature has given them so much that they never find it necessary to use more than half. I like that he feels he can be himself in front of her, though.
But he's also very much been like this since the start. Like, their entire first conversation was like, well, let's just point out how obviously strange and ridiculous all the standard questions that you meet someone in Bath are. Now I will surely pontificate about the nature, duh. It's like,
it's true.
He has maintained his self throughout their relationship, which, again, so has Sir Thorpe.
John Thorpe.
Yep. Mm. Has also maintained himself exactly and ongoingly. It's just that himself is shit.
Oh, yeah. John Thorpe is the worst. But it's no effort to Catherine to believe that Henry Tilney could never be wrong. Ah, Catherine.
The note that I have on that has just got it bad.
He's so smart. Did I tell you how smart he is? He says things and I don't understand them, but he's so smart.
He's so smart and he's so hot and I bet he's always right.
So right. She runs into one of Isabella's sisters after the walk, to which I'm like, would you not just be tired? Why are you going walking in town?
She really needed that ribbon, like immediately, like right now.
Ribbon is essential. You can see that Anne is
a bit over her sister's shit.
But also like Isabella. Two of the sweetest girls in the world have been my dear friends all morning. Shallow friendship. We say the big words, but there's actually nothing underneath it.
Yeah, or there's nothing underneath it the moment they stop being useful. They are great dear friends for accompanying you this morning while you're alone, but in a couple of days when you have other options again and they were like really excited to do something, nah. Or, you know, if they've made plans with someone and you wanted to do something today, yeah, they can cancel their plans. In fact, you'll be so nice, you'll cancel their plans for them. I'm still not...
Not impressed with the thoughts.
I'm not impressed with them, and I'm really not impressed with chapter 13. I'm just not reviewing those chapters, so I have to get all the bitterness out in this one so it doesn't, like, continue on for chapter 16 and then everyone gets annoyed with me.
This is twice, though, that the Thorpes have tried to interfere with her friendship with the Tilneys.
Yeah, it's because the Thorpes want to do, like, a swapsies of, like, yeah, your brother marries into us and our brother marries into you and everything goes along wonderfully.
Sounds quite incestuous, really. Does that make someone your brother-in-law? Brother-in-law twice?
I think it's only brother-in-law twice if you've married into the family twice.
Ah, okay. But yeah, very confusing family dynamics. The Thorpes suck. I'm really glad that you could see this so I don't have to like hold on my disdain for the Thorpes. Because I'm trying not to spoil things and I don't want to be like, hey, by the way, the Thorpes suck. And it's a bit hard with Isabella because, like, at the start, she's like, you're my best friend. James turns up and she's like, Catherine who? What now?
Sorry, female friendship? I don't believe in that.
Not when I've got a boy on my arm. And that's our discussion of chapter 14 of Northanger Abbey. I'm Frances Duncan. This has been Emmy. Thank you for listening and we wish you happy reading. Woo-woo! Just popping back in to let you guys know that we have merch now. I haven't actually got merch with my face on it. That seems a little weird to me. But if you really want it, let me know and I'll do that. There's merch of the Jane Austen Society of Aotearoa New Zealand's logo, some Jane Austen merch, and some Pride and Prejudice, heavily Pride-focused merch too. It's on Redbubble and the link is in the notes. Happy buying!